Now, let me jump to Aristotle for just a moment. To Aristotle, the soul was a principle of animal life. It was a process. It wasn't a thing. In his book, De Anima, which means on the soul, Aristotle attempted to make clear that any assured knowledge about the soul is difficult to obtain. The kinds of questions we have to ask have to be very carefully considered and asked. Asking what is the soul requires us to consider how many different ways there are to answer such a question. Perhaps the soul exists not as a plurality of entities, but as a composite made of different parts of one single entity. Shall we look for the parts and not the whole? Does Aristotle actually prove the existence of the soul through any considerations he might have had? Well, St. Thomas Aquinas and Aristotle both argued that the soul exists and is the prime mover of every living thing without having to move in and of itself. So they kind of implied that it's something invisible. Aristotle's reasoning was based upon his own form of logic, which we now call Aristotelian logic, which is the father of modern logic. Aristotle's point was the following. He said, "Consider an axe. If it had no sharpness and no longer was able to cut wood, would you say it still had the essential quality of being an axe?" "No, of course not," he says. "Sharpness is the axe's essential whatness, and being sharp is essential to an axe's character as an axe. Consider an eye. If it had not sight, would it be an eye?" "No, of course not. It would be a false eye or one drawn on a painting. But that would be an eye in name alone and not the eye's essential whatness." For Aristotle, the soul is the essential whatness which makes the body move. So a body has a soul in the same sense that an axe has sharpness. That was how Aristotle saw it. Okay, let me jump ahead a little bit now, or actually jumping back in time. Plato believed that we all start out in a primal reality, the original one given to us by God. And what concerned Plato was what happens to that vision of that original reality, which he called the ideal reality or the idyllic or whatever you want to call it, when the soul enters into the body. And what happens is that things get distorted and the soul loses sight of what's really important. So everything we do in life, no matter how we try to move and make things happen and whatever we try to create, whatever we do there, it seems like it's always doomed to some kind of failure. We're always like copying the ideal. We're never quite getting there. Think, for example, of a bed. You can think of the ideal bed in your mind. It has the perfect mattress. It has the perfect shape for your body. The covering to keep you warm at night or cool, whatever, is perfect. The pajamas you wear, perfect. The pillow nestles your head perfectly. But now we come to the real beds and, hey, this bed is lumpy or this bed is hard. The springs don't work or it's too soft. It's too this. And I got to kick the blanket off. It's too hot at night. Or these pajamas bind me in the crotch or something like that. The ideal and the real are very separate, aren't they? Yet we keep striving. We keep striving to produce something better than the last, more ideal than the last. In fact, that may be what the whole principle of the Western way of life is all about, striving to reach the ideal. But think about this for a moment. Where in all heaven's name do we get the idea of an ideal in the first place? We've never seen anything ideal anywhere ever in the whole universe. There's nothing that exists that's ideal. Everything has a little bit of a flaw, a little bit of an error, a little bit of sin, a little bit of evil, a little bit of not so perfect, a little bit of dullness in the sharpness of the blade, so to speak, so to speak, so to speak. But yet we have an ideal in our minds. Well, Aristotle might say, well, that's just your imagination. Maybe Crick would have said the same thing, Sir Francis Crick. But maybe what Plato is telling us is that we have that ideal in our minds because we actually come from that ideal. We are aware of that ideal. It is the ideal that exists in this realm of non-existence, this realm which I call the imaginal realm, the realm out of which the whole universe came into being. So, if we look at what Plato is telling us, and we consider for a moment that we don't live in such an ideal world, we see errors everywhere, what would Plato tell us about this? Is it possible that we're seeing errors because maybe we try to make things ideal, and maybe we create illusions of idealism because we don't ever really achieve it? Plato then tells us a story. He says, I want you to consider the following story. There are a bunch of guys and gals, prisoners. They're chained inside of a cave. And while they're in that cave, they are chained to the walls. And because they're chained to the walls, they can't move about freely. In fact, all they can really do is watch the wall opposite them. And on that wall, all they can see are shadows. Shadows which are cast from the firelight at the entrance of the cave, which shines shadows of people that pass in front of the fire onto the walls of the cave. So they see the whole panorama of all the people that pass in front of the cave. And every once in a while, maybe the fire flickers and they can see shadows of themselves on those caves. All they can see are shadows, shadows, shadows. After a while, they begin to forget that they are prisoners in a cave, and they begin to think only about those shadows as being real. And because of that, because they only see the shadows as being real, they begin to believe in those shadows as being real. Plato has us consider that we are similar to the prisoners in the cave, only watching shadows of reality and making them ideal, even though we may know deep in our hearts that that isn't the case at all. Well, is that really true? I mean, reality looks pretty real to me until we begin to consider, well, what about the TV room in which we watch flat two-dimensional images of characters on a screen flickering about doing ideal movements and laugh when they seem so much like ourselves. And after a while, they seem so much like ourselves that we begin to even behave like those characters we see on the screen. For example, the latest fashion, or the way this movie star wears her hair, I'm going to wear my hair that way. Or remember when Michael Jackson used to do the moonwalk, and we would all practice doing the moonwalks. We are very much influenced by the images on the cave wall, which we call the television set. So Plato believes, in spite of all of this and the illusions we are succumbed to, that we are really immortal souls, are having a physical material experience, that we come from this ideal realm. And in embedding ourselves in the ideal realm, things get distorted and we create illusions and have opinions as a result of the distortions that we experience in the material realm. But we all come from that ideal realm.